During this time of year, I try to wear red shirts because it makes me feel culturally relevant. And last Sunday, I had on my signature red shirt, and somebody told me that I looked like a Hong Bao. Except a Hong Bao without all of that annoying money inside. And I'd like to ask you a question. If somebody gave you a Hong Bao, would you rather have a Hong Bao with a lot of money inside or a Hong Bao with very little money inside? And if it has taken you more time than that to answer the question, then you're not being very honest with your answer. It is a natural human tendency to place a very high value on money. And with that comes a problem because you and I, sometimes without realizing it, can end up placing a high value or a higher value on people who have money than on people who do not. And in light of this, I would like to take this Sunday to examine a character quality of God that all too often we tend to overlook, and it is his quality of impartiality. And if you are not familiar with that word, it's just a big way of saying that God does not have favorites. That is to say that if you call out to God, whether you're Jew or Greek, whether you're male or female, whether you're slave or free, you can have confidence that the God of the Bible hears you, because even though you and I might excel at discovering ways to create divisions between one another, that is not the way that the Lord himself looks at the human beings he created in his image. Specifically with today's message, I would like to look at the distinction of those who are wealthy versus those who are poor. And in the book of Genesis, we end up seeing stories where somebody who is very wealthy calls out to God and God answers his prayer. And we also see someone in that same community who is not wealthy and she needs God, and God ends up taking care of her as well. But before we go into that, there are several scriptures that point to this very specific truth. One of them is going to be, would you mind going to the first slide, please? One of them is from the book of Job, and it's Job 34, verse 19. It says very plainly that God is not partial, that means he does not show favorites, to princes, and does not favor the rich over the poor, for they are all the work of his hands. We see that similar sentiment show up in the book of Proverbs, chapter 22, verse 2. It says, "The rich and the poor have this in common: the Lord made them both." If you are a human being, if you have been stamped with God's image, you are valuable in God's sight, regardless of how valuable you may be in the sight of other people. We learn a lot in the Bible from wealthy people, and we learn a lot in the Bible from poor people. And the father of the Judeo-Christian faith, a man named Abraham, was a very wealthy man. Now, his wealth was not measured in U.S. dollars. His wealth was not measured in RMB. It was measured in livestock and influence. He had a lot of people under his care. He had servants. He had slaves. He's the father of our faith. But not everything that the Bible records about him reports him in a positive light. Abraham was actually kind of a sneaky guy. He was a fearful person. And when you are motivated by fear, sometimes you are willing to be deceitful to get out of uncomfortable situations. As we will look at a story in just a moment, being deceitful actually created a much weirder situation than what he normally would have had to deal with. But in addition to being fearful, in addition to being deceitful, the father of our faith, imperfect as he was, also listens to some very bad advice. And as we will see, if you have power and influence and you listen to bad advice and you act on that bad advice, it does not just affect you personally. It will also affect the people under your care. Despite his failures, Abraham is considered to be a great man, not so much because of his own greatness, but simply because, as we see in Genesis 15:6, he trusted in a great God. Genesis 15:6 tells us Abraham trusted God, and God credited it to him as righteousness. It is not his own goodness. It is not his own superiority that made him great. It is simply that he trusted a God who is greater than any human being ever could dream of being. Our first point as we look at Abraham is that God protects and provides for the wealthy who call out to him. First point in your bulletin. God protects and provides for the wealthy who call out to him. In Genesis chapter 20, you do not need to follow along. I'll summarize some of what happens. In chapter 21, I'll be reading it in more detail if you would like to follow it along then. Abraham goes to a country called Gerar. And there is a king, a Philistine king in charge. His name is Abimelech. And Abraham gives a very odd first impression by lying about who his wife is, or at least not telling the whole truth about who his wife is. He tells this Philistine king, "This is my sister," which is partially true. She's his half-sister. What he fails to mention is that she is also his wife. The Philistine king takes her in. He's going to take her into his harem. And God reveals himself to Abimelech in a dream and says, "Don't sin against me by being with this woman. She belongs to this man." Through his deceit, Abraham almost tricked a Philistine king into committing adultery with his wife. God intervened. God prevented that from happening. And in this dream where he talks to Abimelech, this is Genesis chapter 20, verse 7, he tells the king, "Now return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not return her, know that you will certainly die, you and all who are yours." Again, making a bad decision could have very negative impact on the people underneath his care. That being, they get wiped out for sinning against God. In verse 11, Abimelech has approached Abraham and says, "Why'd you do this to me?" And Abraham suddenly becomes extremely open and extremely honest. And he said, "I thought there is absolutely no fear of God in this place. They will kill me because of my wife." He says, "You guys are a pagan people. You're Philistines. You don't believe in the same God I do. The God that I believe in has created borders and boundaries, and you're not going to respect those things. She's my wife. I don't know that you're going to respect that, so I was deceitful." Abimelech decides it is his priority to make things right with Abraham. After all, God had revealed himself directly to this man. And in verse 15, Genesis 20, Abimelech said, "Look, my land is before you. Settle wherever you want." And then he goes out of the way to show Abraham how much more important having a good relationship with Abraham is than that of than simply having more material possessions. And he says, "Look, I am giving your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is a verification of your honor to all who are with you. You are fully vindicated." Earlier, he even gives him sheep and cattle. He goes out of the way to say, "You know what? This stuff is valuable, this stuff is important, but my having a good relationship with you is a higher priority." We're going to go to the section in the middle here in just a moment, but let us skip to the end of Genesis chapter 21. There's a story sandwiched between these two stories. But if you're in Genesis chapter 21, I will be at 22. Let us look at this entire section. We see a lot about God's provision, and we see a lot of things about Abraham's character all at the same time. So Genesis chapter 1, starting at verse 22. "At that time, Abimelech, who was the king, with Phicol, the commander of the army, and said to Abraham, 'God is with you in everything you do. Now swear to me here by God that you will not break an agreement with me or with my children and descendants. As I have kept faith with you, so you will keep faith with me and with the country where you are a resident alien.'" So in this community, we have the king, we have the commander of the military, and we have Abraham, who is a very important foreign prince, and he is a prophet. The people of high regard, the people of prestige, they are together, and as you could expect, God would be present at this meeting because he's omnipresent, he's everywhere, he knows everything that is going on. And Abraham, in verse 24, said, "Yes, I swear it." But then we end up seeing a glimpse into Abraham's character that may be kind of surprising, because Abraham shows us here he can actually be a little bit annoying if the circumstances permit. And it reminds me very much, his response here reminds me of this last week. There was a moment where my daughter and I went swimming, and one of our favorite things to do in the pool is for me to throw her, and I like throwing her high. Because if I throw her high enough, she starts to scream, and then she's screaming the whole way down, and it takes a little extra effort, but it is totally worth it. But sometimes my daughter likes to be thrown farther out, because she wants to do a flip, and if she's too close to me, she can't flip, because she might kick me in the head, and then she'll get in big trouble. And my daughter and I are doing this game. I am throwing her over and over again, and she's having fun, or so I thought, and then she says to me, "Daddy, we have a problem." And I said, "Sweetheart, what is our problem?" She said, "You're not throwing me the right way." And I said, "How many ways are there to throw you?" She said, "I want you to throw me out so that I can do my flips." I said, "Oh, okay, no problem." So I was the guy in charge. I could easily fix the situation. And when she addressed this problem to me, let us simply say her voice was not heavy with respect, she made it very clear she was frustrated, and I solved the problem, but I didn't know that the problem existed. In fact, I didn't know it was a problem at all. And you see that same idea, and you also see Abraham respond to Abimelech with the same level of maturity that my daughter responded to me with our situation. Verse 25, "But Abraham complained to Abimelech because of the water well that Abimelech's servants had seized." So they're making a covenant, and this should surprise you because it doesn't show up prior to now. It is not recorded for us. We are discovering this frustration at the same time as Abimelech. And Abimelech responds the way you would expect. There's a problem. Abraham has been sitting on it, and he has been frustrated by it for a while, and he starts to complain. Basically, he says, "Yeah, I'd love to have a covenant with you guys, except your stupid servants took my well." And he ends up sounding like a kid. Abimelech replied, "I don't know who did this thing. You didn't report anything to me, so I hadn't heard about it until today." So Abraham does not respond with maturity in this situation. Despite that, God ends up using the situation to take care of him. Then Abraham took sheep and cattle and gave them to Abimelech. Note, chapter 20 ended with Abimelech going out of the way to give Abraham more material possessions to show, you know what? Our relationship is more important than my stuff. Abraham ends up doing that same thing here, going out of the way to show Abimelech, our relationship is more important than my things. He gives him sheep, cattle, gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant. But Abraham had set apart 7 ewe lambs from the flock, and Abimelech said to Abraham, "Why have you set these 7 ewe lambs apart?" Verse 30. He replied, "You are to accept the 7 ewe lambs from my hand so that this act will serve as my witness that I dug this well." Abraham used his personal resources to create a well in the wilderness so that him and the people under his care would have a water supply. He is clarifying with the guy in charge of the land, "This well belongs to me." Verse 31, "Therefore that place was called Beersheba because it was there that the two of them swore an oath." And it says that Abraham stayed in that land of the Philistines for many days. When you are in an arid desert land, or when you are anywhere for that matter, it is absolutely crucial to have a source of water. If you do not have water, which is one of our most basic needs, you're not going to last very long. And Abraham, as God's prophet, Abraham as someone under God's protection, Abraham who trusted God and it was credited to him as righteousness, that Abraham is taken care of by God. God uses the situation to make sure that Abraham has what he needs to survive. Abraham's already wealthy, but Abraham ends up having access to the well that he himself dug. Everything's clear. Abimelech's servants aren't going to go take it over again. It is Abraham's property, and him and his servants will have access to the well that he dug. So God intervened. God heard the prayers of a righteous man, a wealthy man, and answered those prayers. In the middle of this story, chapter 21 begins with a hugely important event in the life of Abraham and his wife Sarah, and that is the birth of their biological son Isaac. Now, this is very good news for Abraham. It is very good news to Sarah. It is the fulfillment of a promise God had made to Abraham some 15 years earlier. But it's not going to be good news for a lady named Hagar. She is an Egyptian servant
who is under Sarah's care. And earlier in Genesis, after God had promised Abraham and Sarah a child, Sarah got impatient. And Sarah decided that she was going to help God fulfill his promise to them in a time that was more convenient to her. She expected to have a child right away. It took 15 years. Within that first year, she gets this idea, which is very culturally relevant. In fact, if you remember, Abraham and Sarah are half-brother and sister. They have the same dad. They do not have the same mom. In their original family dynamic, it was perfectly acceptable for a guy to have children with more than one woman. And Sarah comes up with this idea. She does what is culturally acceptable at the expense of what is God's best for her. And she says, hey, Abraham, God promised us a kid. Why don't we have that kid with Hagar, my servant? And some things are a bad idea, even if your wife gives you permission. And this story ends up being very bad for Hagar because Sarah gets jealous right away. Hagar runs away. In Genesis 16, she actually runs off and an angel of the Lord appears to her and says to her, you must go back to your mistress and submit to her mistreatment, a terrible thing for a servant to hear. She wasn't done being in that community according to God's timetable. But God still responds to her cry for help. God still answers her prayer. And in Genesis 16, verses 13 and 14, so she named the Lord who spoke to her, the God who sees, for she said, have I really seen here the one who sees me? That is why she named the spring a well of the living one who sees me. It is located between Kadesh and Bered. So she has a son with Abraham. His name is Ishmael. But this son is not the son of promise. The son of promise is between Abraham and Sarah. His name is Isaac. He is born at the beginning of chapter 21. Good news for Abraham, good news for Sarah, good news for Isaac, bad news for Hagar and her son Ishmael. Genesis 21, verse 8. The child grew and was weaned. This is Isaac. And Abraham held a great feast on the day Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son mocking. This is the one Hagar the Egyptian had born to Abraham. So she said to Abraham, drive out this slave with her son, for the son of this slave will not be a co-heir with my son Isaac. Wait a minute. It was her idea for Ishmael to be born to Hagar in the first place, and now it is her idea to kick out of the community a slave and her son who was born to her husband. Abraham, and having listened to one very bad idea early on, is in a situation where there aren't any good options. And his wife wants to kick out somebody Abraham should be taking care of. Verse 11, now this was a very difficult thing for Abraham because of his son. But God said to Abraham, do not be concerned about the boy and your slave. Whatever Sarah says to do, listen to her, because your offspring will be traced through Isaac. But I will also make a nation of the slave son, because he is your offering. So Abraham is going to do what Sarah wants him to do. That is, kick out a slave and her son. We have the first single mother in the biblical text. And their situation goes from bad to worse because they are about to be completely helpless. Except you and I know that God just said to Abraham, he's going to make a nation out of the slave son, out of Ishmael, because he is Abraham's offspring. That means God is going to protect Ishmael long enough for him to do that. Early in the morning, Abraham got up, took bread and a water skin, put them on Hagar's shoulders, and sent her and the boy away. She left and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she left the boy under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat nearby, about a bow shot away, for she said, I can't bear to watch the boy die. So as she sat nearby, she wept loudly. So they're in a terrible situation. They are dealing with the consequences of Abraham's bad decision. They are on their own in the desert. They don't have water to drink, and she is watching her son dehydrate in front of her. But what happens in verse 17 changes her situation entirely. God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what's wrong, Hagar? Don't be afraid, for God has heard the voice of the boy from the place where he is. Get up, help the boy up, and sustain him, for I will make him a great nation. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. What did Abraham need for him and his servants to survive? They needed a well of water. Where? In Beersheba. What did Hagar and her son need? Water. They needed a well. Where are they? They are in Beersheba. Very possible that God is providing for both of these entities with the same well. God ends up providing for and protecting the wealthy who call out on him, but he doesn't limit his answered prayers to the wealthy. Second point in your bulletin, God protects and provides for the poor who call out to him. And in this story, under Abraham's care, there is no one with less influence, there is no one more in poverty now, and no one in a worse situation than Hagar and Ishmael. But they called out to God, and God answered. Their lack of prestige, their lack of influence, their lack of money, in no way or shape or form, prevented their prayers from reaching God's ears. God opened her eyes. She saw a well of water. So she went and filled the water skin and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy, and he grew. He settled in the wilderness and became an archer. He settled in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother got a wife for him in the land of Egypt. There are a lot of things that happen in the Bible at wells. And in this particular story, God used a well to take care of Abraham's needs. God probably used that same well to take care of Hagar's needs. And in doing this message, I could not stop thinking about what Jesus says to the Samaritan woman when she sees him at the well. Jesus says to her in John chapter 4, verses 13 to 14, Jesus says, "Everyone who drinks from this water will get thirsty again." And that's true of Abraham, that's true of Hagar. Their needs were temporarily met. But whoever drinks from the water that I will give him will never get thirsty again, ever. In fact, the water I will give him will become a well of water springing up within him for eternal life. So Abraham and Hagar had temporary needs met. But Jesus Christ came through Abraham's line not just to take care of our temporary needs, but to fulfill our ultimate eternal needs as well. And that is right standing with God, so we can spend an eternity with the God who loves us. Let us close our time together with a word of prayer.